Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale is almost here. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair, plus amazing doorbuster deals and free shipping site-wide. Shop the sale at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome back to another episode of the Street Alpha Podcast. And today we are in Sydney, Australia again. We had to stop by CRD, or Croydon, the legends in the game, who have the fastest, they have a ton of records, but they have the fastest RB in the world. So a lot of people have been looking up to these guys in the States. So we had to stop by and pay them a visit and have them on the podcast. So today we have Khan and Rob. These two have been doing this for how long? How many years now?
Oh, geez, for me, I got into the import scene back in 1995. 30 years?
30 years.
Yeah, so for me, it's been about 25 years since I started in the industry.
30 years of history, 30 years of R&D. You guys have tried and done so many things, spent a lot of money, I'm sure, right? To get the RB platform to what it is. So hopefully you guys can push it to the point where there's a lot more RBs in the States and we can beat the 2J.
Yeah.
So before we start, let's give a round of applause for Khan and Rob. So thank you guys for taking the time to do this. I know I've been rushed. I've been like running around all day because I had another podcast before, setting up and so on. So you guys have been super patient. I really appreciate that.
No worries.
So I am from the States, of course, so I don't really know too much of the history of CRD, how you guys have met each other, how you guys, you know, came together. So can you kind of paint the picture for everybody who doesn't know who you guys are?
So I started off with CRD back in 2001.
Okay.
As an apprentice. Okay. And worked through under Jim and Theo, the original owners. Okay.
Nitto.
Yeah, through they own Nitto now, correct. Okay. Yeah. So work with them up until say 2017. Then actually me and Omar purchased the business.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah. So Rob's just like part of the furniture here. he doesn't go anywhere.
I'm just behind the scenes, you know.
I didn't know Omar. Oh, that's crazy. Okay.
Yeah, so Omar's actually business partner. Rob's here obviously as a good friend and helps. He's got a lot of business experience as well, so okay. He helps us out with stuff as well.
Nice.
And then Rob's obviously, I met Rob back. Actually, the first car I worked on was actually his car.
Really?
In 2001. Yeah, he's 200SX.
200SX.
Yeah.
206,
yeah. So S14.
Yeah. That was my first import style car that I had back then, and I was sort of introduced to the game through Jim.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted that car to be fast, and you know, at that point, I think we got it down to an 8.7.
Wow.
Was it here, early 90s?
Yeah. That's impressive.
No, sorry, mid-90s.
Late 2003 sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, we sort of wanted to keep chipping away and I thought, you know what, I'll just move to the GDR platform after that.
So yeah, it was SR20?
SR20.
Yeah.
So DET. It was an SR20 DET, had a C4 in it, it was a Turbo Smart T88. And it went, 870 to 154, I think it was back then.
Damn.
So back in 2000, I think it was 2003 it ran that time.
That's a long time ago. Yeah. 87, that's
stock
fast.
Suspension, stock chassis.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing special.
I always ask this question to everybody, but like when you have a passion or you have something that you want to chase after, you're looking at somebody or another shop or another platform or something to kind of get inspiration. So what was the inspiration to keep that platform moving at the time?
At that point, there was no one else faster. It was the fastest S14 in the world, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at that point.
Okay.
There was the Japs were running, I think, 8.9.
Okay.
Okay, and the car, I think, that HKS had.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it was Jun. It was a Jun.
Yeah, okay,
Super
maybe Jun.
Or whatever it was, yeah.
And that was really it. Once we went past that, there was no one to chase. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you don't feel like there was any more you could have done with that platform?
No. That was really great, and I still have a like a special spot in my heart for it. But I think that nothing beats GDRs. The whole four-wheel drive, you know, the GDR as a platform and how they drive and what they represent. You really can't beat it, as far as I'm concerned.
It seems like it's super popular in Australia to have an RB, right? You guys are so far ahead of the States with this. But at the time, right, with the RB26, you guys actually had RB30s too, right?
Yes. We had 30s, but we back then we were running 2.7s and 2.8s.
You guys?
Yeah. Yes, our big motor back then was 2.7s up until probably, I'm going to say 2014, 2013, when we started going bigger in June. We were big on the 2.7s. So we had GDR 700, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with back then as well. So back in 2004, that went 8.2 at 164, I think it was, from memory. In around R33 GDR,
Around the same time that I was racing Devilish, the 200SX.
So that sort of kickstarted the whole GDR scene for us. At that time, that was, I think, the second fastest GDR in the world, from memory.
Yes.
Behind the HKS one.
Correct.
Yeah, the HKS one was the fastest one. And back, even the HKS one, that had a high deck 2.8 motor back then as well.
You guys never explored with the RB30 yet?
At that point. So the RB30 was something that was developed mainly when we went to the Billabong.
Okay.
So we were running the RD, which was the stronger cast iron block.
RD28.
RD28, yes, right. Yep, which came out of the diesel engines. With that there, we did put the 3.2 stroker in. Okay, but again, it came at a cost where the deck would move and push water and all the rest of it when you got over 2,000 horsepower.
How far were you guys able to push the 2.8s?
The quickest we went with the 2.7, 2.8, I think, was about the 167 mile an hour mark. So back then we didn't have hub dynos and all that sort of stuff, so you couldn't really run them on our chassis dynos
to
try to get a power figure per se. But yeah, it was around that, just on that 170 mile an hour mark, the fastest we went back then.
Now, what ECU were you guys using? What was the tuning like back then?
Motec M800s.
Motec from day one. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Jim, the original owner, was actually, he was one of the first people here to play with the Motecs, and back with the old screwdrivers, really old school early days.
Yeah.
And then that obviously developed.
Before the M800?
There was the M4. So we had an M4 in Devilish and GDR 700. Okay. And then Devilish got updated to the M800. And then we ran the M800 for a while as well. And then obviously the M1s come out. So now we've switched over to the M1s.
So Motec is an Australian company?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So were you guys, because if you guys are doing records and stuff back then, I'm sure you guys had sort of a close relationship.
Yeah, we still do. Yeah. We work very closely with him still. So
we're Motec dealers.
Yeah. Right? Motec dealers have been for, I think, nearly 30 years now. So.
Right. So I'm sure they were expecting, I don't know if they have expectations, but it's kind of hard for people to even get like sponsors or work with them?
Oh, there was no sponsorship or anything like that. No, it's purely we used it because it was the best product we felt on the market.
Right.
And it gave us the best results, consistency and that sort of stuff.
Have you ever explored in anything else?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, so we deal with Howtex as well. Okay. M-tron's, Howtec, M-tron, Motec will probably be the three most popular ones. And there's Lynx as well.
Yeah.
So it's really probably Motec and Howtec for us.
M-tron's also another Australian brand.
All of them are Australian.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
that is crazy. Is there anything in Link too?
Link's New Zealand. Link's from New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Yeah, so we do a little bit with them, but like I said, usually we stick to the Australian stuff. We're pretty happy with it.
And the 35s obviously have EQTEC and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the newer stuff.
Yeah. That's right. But that's different.
So how do you guys like kind of know each other? How'd you guys?
We met through the shop. So he was a customer back then as well under Jim.
Okay.
And then we met through the shop and. We used to call him the Flying Kebab back in the day because he used to have his kebab shops. It was good. We met back then. And like I said, the first car I worked on was his 200SX. And I remember this thing was virtually brand new. Had all the leather interior in it, everything. Yeah. And my first job was to strip that down to turn it into a race car. And I'm looking and going, what's wrong with you guys? This car's brand new. Well, there's a lot of loose screws up there and nothing's changed.
We know 3 horsepower's weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I can't even ask. I don't know if I can ask what was like growing the business, but how was it like having customers come in through those records or the things you were doing?
Yeah.
Look, from my perspective, I've seen the shop grow with, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 employees.
Yeah.
And it's the inspiration, I think, and the dedication that Con had
yeah.
from a young age, you know, like loving what he does,
right.
being involved. And then you could see the aspiration of wanting to be more than just an employee.
Just an employee, yeah.
And, you know, he says stepping stones, whatever. He got talking to Jim, obviously, down the track. You know, mm-hmm. he said, you know, one day I want to buy the business off you. And Jim said, you know, potentially I'll sell it, et cetera. And this is where we ended up. You know, obviously there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in between right. to get no, there. Course, but, yeah, course, yeah, that's course. A sort of the short of it.
Where do you see this company being in the next 5 years? Like, what is
look, we'd like to get into, obviously, doing our own stuff as well, you know, parts, this and that. Not yeah. like internal engine parts, more the bolt-on stuff and all that sort of thing. So making our own kits and that sort of stuff. It is hard to sort of focus on doing that when we've got such a busy race schedule though and
yeah.
Trying to satisfy what our customers are after as well. So
right.
it is hard to get to sort of work to that, but yeah. that's what we're sort of trying to get to.
So being in Australia, there's different shops that do different things. It's obviously yep. that's how yep. it is anywhere else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you guys are more known for like drag racing stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's other shops that are doing like more street stuff. But you guys do a combination of everything, or you guys mainly focus on customers who want to drive their car on the track?
Pretty much we'll focus on what our customers are after. So if someone wants to drift, we're happy to
okay.
do them a setup to drift. If they want to drag, we go down that path as well. Same with the circuit. We've got Drew Hall, who's been a customer of ours for, I think, as well. Almost as long as you. Yeah, since probably in 2005-ish, 2007, thereabouts. So he's been a long-time customer, and that's that Wild Time Attack 34 now. So
yeah.
we support him. We do the work on that and sort of, yeah. So the Croydon actually has a strong circuit background as well.
Okay.
So originally started with circuit. That's where Jim started sort of his side.
It wasn't drag racing.
Yeah, it wasn't drag racing. Circuit, drag racing.
And then
I sort of
pushed it towards drag yeah. racing.
Got you. So what was the push for drag racing? Just because you were drag Look, racing or?
Yeah. I suppose my background is just street cars and street racing.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, you get to a point where street racing is fun, but you also want to, you know, see the numbers on the board.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of, that's the link. And yeah, it just sort of grew from there.
So how do you manage breaking records and, you know, going to the track, doing all these events and stuff like that, and also, you know, dealing with customers, because you have a lot of customers that also go with you to the yeah. events, right?
Yeah.
So what is it like, you know, managing that in terms of time and schedules?
It's very hard. Look, you want to give everyone 100%, but like, yeah. for example, GDR Festival, we had 13 cars racing.
Right.
It's impossible to give everyone 100% when yeah. you've got 13 cars racing. So you do your best. You try to get the right people in place to help. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much you can do in the time we've got there as well. So
right. So what does it look like if a customer wanted to come to CRD and yep. build a car? Let's say if I move to Australia
yep.
and I mean, I probably wouldn't buy a GTR. It's a little too expensive. But let's say if I had one
yep.
and I wanted to have my car built by you guys, yep. what is the process like?
Well, look, it depends on my first question to the customer is, what do you want from the car?
Okay.
Because the biggest issue I find these days, a lot of people spend money unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. Because they don't know what they're after with the car.
Right.
So they think they want to go down, say, a direction, but by the time they get to the end, they've changed everything another 2-3 times because they end up wanting to go a different direction.
Right.
So
right.
my yeah. first thing is, hey, what do you want from the car? Because unless you tell me what you want, I can't point you in the right direction. So it's all good and well for us to go, no, this is a package, this is what we're doing, and that's it. But down the track, if he's got aspirations to do something bigger or better,
mm-hmm.
then I'd prefer to do the build in a way where they're not double spending and wasting money. So I sort of try to look after their best interests as well to make sure that, you know, they get the right bits on their car to support them going forward.
Because if they ask me, I'll just say, you know what, you go the biggest, you do it once, and you be the fastest. That's it.
I agree. I'm with that.
Yeah.
That's just how, yeah, look.
I'm with that too, yeah. but then budgets also. So
he 100%.
So he keeps him away from some of the customers because
yeah, he's a bad influence
apparently.
As soon as a lot of things happen on a Christmas party, put it that way. As soon as he gets a hold of some customers, some builds go from 2.8 to JJ's 200SX. So that'll happen at a Christmas party.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He actually had a 2.8 machined at the shop ready to, actually it was a 2.6 or 2.8 machined at the shop ready to build. And then by the time the Christmas party finished, he was upgraded to a 3 loader. And then by the time the build started, it ended up with a billet block. And then that escalated pretty quickly.
Yeah, but he never looked back after that.
He did until his turbo come out the compressor.
That happens. Shit happens. What do you do?
So you guys have a lot of different aspects of the business, I'm sure, right? You have Time Attack, you have drag racing, yep. street cars, and so on. And you have to kind of be able to cater to all customers, right?
Yep.
So what different stations do you guys have here? You guys build everything in-house, like fab, or do you guys outsource a lot of stuff?
So machine work for our engines, we've got a couple of people that we work with for that. Then we've got all the fab work that gets done in-house.
Okay.
Steve looks after all the fab work. Engine building, we've got Daniel Lukey primarily building all the engines these days.
Okay.
And then obviously through the rest of the shop, we've got all the technicians. Some guys focus on builds, some guys focus on the smaller daily stuff.
Mm-hmm. In-house wiring.
Yeah, in-house wiring. Brendan looks after all the wiring. Simon helps out with the wiring side, diagnosis. So everyone's got their strengths.
Yeah.
So we sort of...
Unless we get to a point where we can't keep up, and it happens often, then we outsource a harness here or something there. It just depends on how quick we need to get cars out.
So your customer cars and then your, like, these cars, right? Like the big stuff.
Well, these are either very close friends, customers as well.
I was going to say, because time-wise, like if you have wiring, takes some time.
Wiring does take some time, and that's the biggest hurdle we've got, to be honest, because
it needs to be so accurate.
We have a backlog of wiring because it's just every car gets a loom, and then one car spirals and gets a full body loom. So then the Motec PDMs are doing the whole car.
Right.
And it's just time, which it's hard, and you need the right people doing it.
Yeah.
So Brendan's really good. He's really methodical with it. So
when it comes to like fab stuff, you guys have all that sorted? Like, how long does it take to fab up a car? Because a lot of the cars that you have here are really nice.
It depends on what they're fabbing. So like, you've got like the car behind me, that's got all titanium, you know, intake pipes, cooler pipes, all that sort of stuff. Right. So that can take a fair bit. The HJA R34, you saw that everything's titanium on that.
Right.
Cooler pipe and exhaust, intake pipes, a whole lot. So the intake pipe took Steve, I think, close to a day and a half to weld it. Like if you have a look at the intake pipe, it's God knows how many pie cuts and all that sort of stuff. Cuts. So
it looks so nice though.
Yeah. So Steve's really good with the tie stuff and all his fab work. So
going back to what I said before, if I were to come here and build a car, right? What would the turnaround time be for a build?
That all depends on what I've got at the time. So I'll be honest, I've sort of tried holding off getting extra builds in at the moment because there is sort of a bit of a backlog, which I'm going to say we're just about through.
Okay.
And really, if you've got everything, depends on the type of build you want, you're going to be looking anywhere.
I'll tell you what the delays are. If the car needs chassis work and bar work, and then the car has to get stripped, go out, get some bar work done, depending on what sort of rear end, front end, how you're going to, you know, what sort of modifications.
Yeah.
Then it comes back. Then obviously you dummy fit everything. You do all the fabrication work. And then you obviously measure all the wiring.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it goes back out for rebuild. Like then you build the engine, gearboxes, whatever. You put everything in. Then you do final assembly, powder coating, make everything look pretty. Does the car need painting? You know, does it need other body parts? I mean, look, if you look around, just the sort of the quality and level of car that our customers aspire to, you know, especially, you know, like some good friends of ours. Like George and that, like it's not a car that you're going to throw in the back shed.
Yeah.
You know, they're show cars.
Right.
That still go very, very fast. So a car like that will take a lot longer to build than a car that we used to build back in the 2000s.
Right.
If you want to call it that.
So because I think from memory, I think
the level of detail wasn't what it is today.
Yeah.
I think JJ's car was around 450, 500 hours to build it. So
what?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of work in it, like from fab work and this and that. There's a lot in it. And if you look underneath that car, it's every nut and bolt, like it's a fair bit of work gone into it. There's a lot of attention to detail. So, and that's the thing, it all depends on what type of level of build you're after.
Yeah, right. Look, the majority of our customers want their cars to look just as good as they go fast, you know, like,
so that's the biggest thing I keep saying it. It's the way you guys do cars here is different.
Yeah.
Like it's show car, but also race car, and you can do both.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's super cool that you guys do that. And that's how I build. I can't say I build my cars, but that's how I'm building my car now.
Yeah.
And I would continue to, because you want to feel comfortable going to a car show or anywhere and popping your hood. You don't want to have to be like, oh, I'm not going to pop it today because
You want to feel proud of what you build.
Yeah. 100%.
And the achievements you get out of it.
Right. Yes. Right. You guys are known for RBs, of course, right? And there's people in the States who build them. There's actually I think the record over there right now is like 1,400 or something like that.
Yep.
But it was an Australian motor that was shipped out from Australia too.
Okay.
So it'd be cool to get insight from you guys on the RB platform and kind of let us know the limitations, things you guys have experienced, or what you think is more practical. So if you want to build an RB26, does it make sense to build one now with the amount of money and time and availability? Or
no chance. He's going to say no.
Okay. No chance.
Because his screws are loose.
No chance.
Again, look, does it make sense to build a 26? It depends what you're after. If you're after
no one's after 500 horsepower.
But some people still want
if they're after 500 horsepower, they can go somewhere else.
Some people still want 800 horsepower.
No, so, they don't. No, that's because
you don't.
No, because when you ask the customer a question, what do you want from the car? They don't want to say, I want 2,000 horsepower.
Why not? Because if you want 2,000 horsepower, say you want 2,000 horsepower.
They don't know they want 2,000 horsepower until they go, we'll start with 1,000, then we'll go 1,200, and then by the time the build keeps going, they end up at 2,000. But they've wasted a year.
So what I mean by the screws are loose. So your build, to throw it out, buy a billet motor, and just go straight to 2,500 horsepower.
You're
going to
end up there anyway. Trust me, you will.
I'm not going to lie. The only reason I'm going to end up there is because I came to Australia. That's the only reason.
Okay.
I would have never
known
about
this. So imagine you live here and see these cars every day. 100%.
I'd be like, hey, man, like, I'd probably either sell it or put it in something else and then start over, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You're right in that sense.
So I built an R34 street car.
Okay.
And it's stock location, twin turbos. And for me, unless it's 1,000 horsepower, I won't build it.
Yeah, but that's your favorite car.
Yeah, but
it's his favorite car.
But that is 1,000 horsepower stock location twin setup.
Yeah,
you know.
So we didn't make 1,000. We made about 920, I think it was, 900 horsepower.
And it's not going to get driven often enough until we end up making 1,000 horsepower. That's just how it is. You know, it has to. They have to perform.
It is
because it's RB or nothing.
It is probably hands down one of the best street builds we've done.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, man. It's twin turbos, low mounts. It's got all the Nismo.
Oh, and it's twin turbo.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So stock location.
It's got all the It's got all the Nismo intercooler piping, carbon piping,
full carbon pipe work, airbox, everything.
Yeah, and it made from memory
960 or something, 950.
Yeah. It made 900 or some horsepower from memory. It's a pretty cool car, man. Pretty cool.
Yeah, the thing's crazy.
Yeah. So that makes under 1,000. So you don't need to go billet and this and that for that.
No,
sort
but
of
it's
power.
A 2.8.
Okay. I was going to say, is it a 26?
Yeah, that's 2.8.
It's a 2.8.
It's a 2.8.
Okay. Yes, obviously a 26 engine block, but the point is, that's never going to be raced. It's honestly a garage car. It's got a stock gearbox, stock diffs. You know what I mean? It's just a cruiser. But a cruiser entry level for me is 1,000 horsepower.
Nowadays, all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But even that, it's boring, but it's cool. You get what I'm saying? So that's how we look at it. For someone who comes to a performance shop and they want to build a car that, you know, they're going to be able to roll race, take to the track, you know what I mean? And just have a bit of fun. Mm-hmm. You have to build something that's capable of 2,000 horsepower, but turn it down to 1,500.
It's 1,500. All right. I thought you were going to say 1,000, but
No. Turn it down to 1,500.
Told you,
but then, you know, that's a reliable package.
Yeah.
If you do the right thing,
You don't want to.
I mean, look, George's Warzilla, the Blue 34.
Yeah,
that's the least worked on car in the shop. That debuted probably 6 months ago.
No, it was maybe
9 months ago.
No, it was maybe about nine. Yeah? Nearly a year ago now. Yeah, just under a year ago.
It debuted. Yeah. Okay, whatever it was, 10 months ago, 11 months ago, it went out. It ran a six, the very first
full pass it had. 690. Yeah,
we put it in the corner. Went out one other time just because, but there was other cars, so we didn't even focus on it. And GDR Festival. That's its third outing. Third outing. And it just does laps, 6 second laps.
It was built to run 6.9. So the purpose of the build was obviously to get it into the sixes.
But
first.
It's engineered to run 6.5s. So
it's actually the same setup that's in
Jordan. So it runs 6.9s comfortably all day, every day, reliably.
So this is a 34.
Yeah.
That the fastest 34?
Yeah, that's the one that took out GDR Festival.
That's the first 34 into the sixes and the fastest 34.
It's the only 34 in the sixes at the moment. Yeah.
But it's not manual.
No. It's turbo 400. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So no 26. You don't think it's
26.
Worth it.
Not for me.
They're still good. They've got their place. They've got their place. Everyone wants something different.
Right.
I still like
because
a
because that's the heritage of the RB.
Yeah.
Without that, we wouldn't have got to the, you know, like to where we are now.
I still like the big 2.7, 2.8 motors, that rev and that sort of thing. That S15 that you saw, that Jet S15, I think it was, or Jet 15.
Yes,
the one yesterday.
Yeah,
yeah, really yeah, that nice. Makes about 1,000. That's a pretty cool thing, and that revs to about 10,500. But the big setups, yeah, you'll spin them to about 11, and they've but just got a different note to them.
It's still a stroker, like
yeah, not, correct.
Like,
yeah.
Well, I'm talking about like a
2.6. Look, I'll be honest, not many people do just 2.6s these days.
In the States, they
do. Not many people just do. There's very better. Few.
No, no, they haven't been exposed. This is the problem. They don't know better. They haven't been exposed to what we do here.
You still get one every now and then. That you know, we'll just use a stock crank, rods and pistons, that sort of thing. But the bulk of the people, even if they keep with a 26 platform, they'll still stroke it. So a lot of people just go straight to a stroke kit.
Look, the bottom line is, when I argue for them. Because
no, I get
later
it.
Down the track they're gonna do the change anyway.
Yeah,
and I've seen it, honest. But I haven't seen it once or twice. I've seen it 50 times. You know, and I think, oh man, this is another one. Starts there, ends up there, and builds it 3 times.
So okay, so let's say you have it. They're watching this right now.
Yep.
You know, because they're looking up to the Australians. Yep. You have a 26. Where would you say you can push that to?
2.6s, look, as a 2.6 with a stock crank, we've probably had them at around that 800, 900 horsepower.
And now is that like your...
And it's not that we had issues and stopped running it,
yeah.
But most people just go to a stroke if they're chasing more than that. That's all it is.
So, but you still have the issue with the cast, no? Isn't the cast an issue once not you're getting in those...
Not at that horsepower.
At 800?
No. Yeah, that sort of power, you won't have an issue.
No, it's not more, with this cast. It's problem. More the components, I think, like the quality of the rods.
Okay.
And that sort of stuff, because it's all stock components.
Wait, hold on. So you won't have issues at 800 horsepower on an RB26 cast block?
No.
Interesting.
Okay, no, that should be fine. There shouldn't be any reason why you can't run them at that. We had the circuit cars running around. Oh, look, I was a 2.8. Really, what's the difference between a 2.8 in a cast block and a 2.6 in a cast block? Your crank. So where your limitations are going to be there is the RPM that you spin the motor to.
Mm.
You know, you go to a 2.7 or a 2.8, you're going to have a full counterweighted crankshaft. So you will rev the thing a lot harder. But in saying that, like I said, at 2.6s, you shouldn't have a crank fail around that 800 horsepower.
No, but also, when it comes to comes to engines, if you go a little bit bigger in the turbo to achieve 800 horsepower easily without huge back pressures, you know what I mean?
Okay.
All the things that damage engines, then, you know, you're doing it comfortably. Yeah, right. It'll be laggy. But it'll do it comfortably.
It'll make the motor more efficient.
You know what I mean?
So,
when you've got a turbo on the edge and you need to squeeze every little horsepower out of it to get to 800 horsepower, then it's going to put more stress on the engine. Yeah, and then it might not last as long. And these little things all make a difference to the longevity, you know, of whatever
engine. Then it depends on
but this is across the board, not just
depends RVs. On the bore size you run as well, obviously, with that sort of thing. So obviously you go too big in the bore, you can split a bore as well. So you really want to try to keep your bore size down to a minimum.
Okay.
You know, if you can run them 86, 86 and a half. And
to keep the thickness between the bore.
To
keep your bore thickness, that's right.
Okay, so then where's the limit?
The crankshaft.
But I'm saying, like, what's the most you've done on the 26?
For us, like I said, probably around that 800-900 horsepower mark because anyone that chases more than that always ends up going to a 2.7 or a 2.8. Like we don't have
3.2.
Yeah, whatever. We don't have someone come in and go, I want to make 1,500 horsepower on a 2.6.
Oh, 2.6.
Yeah, no one does it.
Why would you?
You might get one blue moon that does it. You know what I mean?
But one good reason. What's one good reason why you would chase power out of a 2.6 when in the same platform you can go 3.2?
Well, even if you keep it in the 2.6
or 2.8, block, if you want to change blocks,
Well, I think the machining. It costs a little bit more to do an RB30.
Yeah, on that side. So if you even if you want to keep it a 2.8, like I said, if someone's chasing 1,000 plus, then they're going to go to a 2.8 or a 2.7.
Right. Okay, so this issue with the block is not a thing?
What issue?
Like cracking sleeves, all these things?
You can crack sleeve if there's excessive. Yeah, if there's excessive cylinder pressures, you can crack sleeves.
Okay.
So he actually split a bore in his thing. That was a 2.7. And that was actually an accident while he was driving. So back then he had an exhaust valve in his exhaust system and he took someone for a drive and this thing was making about 1,000 horsepower back then.
About 600, 650 kilowatts.
Yeah, it was thereabouts.
Okay.
And then someone's actually closed the glove box and pushed the switch down, okay, and closed the valve while it was under full throttle.
Exhaust valve.
So pressures would have gone through the roof and it actually split a bore, come back, it hurt itself.
Oh, but that's like a incident.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. You can still split bores. Like, we've had them split in other instances as well, obviously. But like I said, most people just go straight to a different crankshaft and rotating.
So Nitto came out with the Y Journal.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Now, the way that the person who's building my motor tunes RBs, he kind of doesn't bring boost in too soon.
Correct.
So is that a thing that you should kind of implement?
That's one thing we definitely do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just because of torque.
Yes, correct.
Right.
And the load on the bearing.
When it comes to revving these motors,
yep.
Is that something that's like preference for customer, like something that...
Depends on the combination.
Okay.
So a lot of, like, I can have two identical motors and one could have, for example, a 6870 on it and the other one will have a 7685. The two identical motors, the 7685 motor will rev harder because you don't have the back pressure in the motor as well. So a lot of that's dependent on then the turbocharger on the car and that sort of thing. So
the more back pressure
that you've got, the less it's going to want to rev as well and make power. Yeah. You can rev it, but it needs to make power at that.
Everything makes a difference.
So it seems like back pressure is pretty
important. A big thing, yeah, 100%. It's a big thing.
Technically, you would probably run a bigger cam, I'm assuming?
Yes, we definitely run the bigger cams. And like I said, what you spin the motor to is really just dependent on the camshaft combo, the turbo combo, all that sort of thing.
What is like a good cam if you wanted to...
We've got our own grinds, obviously, that we work with. You know, some of the Kelford stuff is good as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've got some stuff that we try to keep close to our chest, obviously. Can't reveal all our secrets.
No, you can tell me what kind of 272 or something. Like, I mean, there's more to that.
Nah, look, it depends on what you're chasing as well. Again, what turbos on the car and that sort of thing as well.
No, of course. You can't just throw cams on the car and it's like,
correct.
I get it.
So there's obviously more things that come into it as well.
Right. So.
Now, look, you got to be around that 300 in duration and all that. You know, lift.
You said 300.
Yeah.
He's still got 3,000 in his head.
Sorry, you're talking. What are you talking about? 1,000 horsepower or
duration?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, but you will get up there on the big motors. But yeah, our big motors, like the motors that are in, you know, the cars that race.
Mm-hmm. They'll
spin to 11.5 sometimes, depending on what's happening.
Something like that. You know, it's like, all right, you know, we get it. So, where do you think for a street car, like RPM? Where, I mean, because usually 8,500 is pretty fair.
Yeah.
But anything over that, people say that it doesn't really live.
Yeah, but the problem is even our street cars back in the 2000s were revving over 10,000 RPM.
Yeah, 10.5.
That's why you're asking the wrong people. Sorry, man. I'm just
look, why?
What can I say?
The street car, just how can I put it?
I love it.
The RPM's not really going to stop you using the car on the street.
No, 100%.
Like,
yeah.
Like if you want to short shift it at 8,000 and the thing revs to 10.5, then you do that. Do you know what I mean?
But if you're still making power at over 10, why wouldn't you use it?
That's true.
You know? So you're not over revving it unless the components and the rotating assembly can't handle it.
Right.
Yeah, now that's a different story.
But if you're running usually like a bigger turbo, you would need the RPM technically to
get the best out of it.
Yeah. Right. Well, if you've got a old school T88 that doesn't come on to 6,000 RPM, 6,500
RPM. Yeah,
no, then of course you got to rev them because you still need a decent power band to work with.
All right, cool. So 26, all right.
Look, the RB platform revs a lot harder than the 2J platform.
Revs?
Yeah. Yes.
I think everybody knows that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, so.
But revs doesn't really mean much,
power?
Right?
Oh, it does.
No, revs is power.
Of course it is.
If you've got the right setup, yeah.
If you got the right setup, but I mean,
so we'll spin it. We'll spin our big motors, like I said, to 11, and they will make peak power at 11.
Depending on the combo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on the combo. 100%. You know, between 10 and a half, 11, you're still making power with our big engines.
You told me that most of the stuff you guys do are 3.2. It's not 3.4 or 3.6.
No. Yeah, correct.
Right? So with the RB30 now, you guys are doing billet.
Right? Yes. Yep.
Which is another thing that's not too common in the States. So what was the reason for going with billet? Why do you guys mostly run billets out
strength.
Here?
Strength. Strength and the cost.
Safety, strength, reliability. They're the three main factors.
Mm-hmm.
Strength, meaning obviously, you know, the block itself is not going to split.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, or it can split, okay, but it'll take a lot more before it happens, and if it does, then there's a problem with the setup and tune.
Okay.
Reliability, obviously, you know, the billet can withstand a lot more punishment.
Right.
Okay. It's just stronger than the cast material. Mm-hmm. And we're able to get a lot more power out of it.
Were you guys ever at a point where you were just like, because you're doing Billet now, so but there was a point where you guys were running Cast, of course, for a while. What was the breaking point where you guys were like, all right, we're done with our, so, we're done with the Cast.
So when we were on Cast, the biggest we pushed the Cast would have been on June. We went 7-2, 191 from memory. Was thereabouts on the Cast block, and that was still with a wet deck. That was the last straw for us because it was actually on that pass, it actually lifted the head, spat water under the tire, and the car went sideways across the line. So after that, we've gone, we need to switch to a dry deck. It's not safe.
How long ago was that?
It's a while ago now.
Yeah, it's close to 10 years ago. Yeah, it would have been.
How long?
Oh, maybe about 7-8 years ago.
It
was about 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it was about 7-8 years ago. And that was, for us, the final straw going, okay, it's not safe.
Yeah.
Like if we're sending down at nearly 200 mile an hour, we've got to make sure that we're comfortable sending him down in something that's going to be reliable and safe for him as well.
Yeah, possibly 8-9 years ago, yeah.
What are the limits? What did you make on that?
It lifted the head at that point.
Look, so
at
you
that
can point make 2,000 horsepower out of Cast. No problems. But it comes at a cost.
Now, is that half filling it?
We would half fill them. So all our Cast motors, we never once completely filled it and ran it as a dry block.
Okay.
So all our Cast motors were only half filled, water still going through the deck. Really, if you want to push a Cast further, then you will completely fill it and run it completely dry. And you'll make over 2,000, no problems. But again,
but we never ran
cost, at what point do you just go, it's not even worth doing it? Do you know what I mean? So for us, we would start sleeving our motors and all that sort of thing. And by the time you spend all that extra money doing that, you don't end up much different to just going, you know what, let's just go buy a billet. And the thing's a dry deck, it's ready to go, and it's lighter.
True.
But the billet's not that expensive if you really add up the numbers. You know,
okay, so it's like, what is it?
About 14,000 for a billet block, 13 something.
Yeah, Australian. They're just, I think, 13.9, thereabouts, Australia.
And then you have rotating assembly, of course.
Yeah, then correct. You get your rotating, yeah, correct. Now,
that can vary depending on where you want to be in horsepower range.
Now, if you're running a billet, do you need to run a brace?
No.
No, not
at all. Just eliminates
it's ready to bolt a forward drive sump straight onto it.
That would actually be nice, actually.
So you get rid of a heap of things.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you end up, like I said, at not much of a point, price difference cost, you know what I mean?
Right.
To do it.
Right. And then also...
less mucking around in the build.
Yeah. No, 100%. Because that space actually is...
Correct.
It takes up more space with the brace.
Correct.
That's right.
Interesting. Okay, I didn't think about that.
He's now, sold, just so he doesn't have to put a girdle on it.
So now, at these high horsepower numbers, also, you guys are running dry sumps.
Yeah. Right?
Yes.
That's
another argument I have with everyone.
Okay.
Every build to me should have a dry sump.
Every build?
Not, well, okay. 800 horsepower, no. 1,000 horsepower, you can probably get away with it. But as soon as you see north of 11, 1200, why waste time and not go dry sump?
Dry sump.
Yeah. It's an insurance policy. That's all it is. It's just an insurance policy. You know, does a wet sump put? Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But everything comes at a cost.
Wet sump or even an external pump. Yeah, we've had the external pumps up to still not as good. 1,300, 1,400. Of course, it's not as good as a dry sump.
But there you go. So you're spending the money once rather than twice or three times and waiting for failure to happen.
It's true.
That's my experience. It's what I tell everyone. You know, I look at it from a customer's point of view.
Yeah.
You know, spending the money. You know, you learn the hard way. I have learned the hard way so many times. So, just do it once right.
So run a dry sump if you want to make big power.
Yeah. Yes, 100%.
But even if you don't, what I'm trying to say is even if you're not making big power, what's stopping you from dry sumping it and just having that peace of mind?
The money, it's expensive. It's
like but it's 10, peace 000. Of mind.
Yeah.
It is expensive. Yeah. 100% peace of mind.
And that's all it is. It's peace of mind.
But that $10,000, you can get some tires, you can get some wheels, you can get some.
Yeah, I get it. But you're still spending money on the wet sump system.
100%.
So you got to take that out and
For peace of mind, 100%. Now, what about the heads? You guys are running Cast or billet?
So
we've got
both. Okay. We've got both at the moment. So our bigger Cast, a lot of them were Cast up until recently, so you've probably seen now the billet heads have been released.
Yeah.
We've been testing them, gone 570, 580 in Zeus a couple times with them. The reliability that we've got out of them so far has been unbelievable. I think we went to line about 20 times.
Yeah, 22 times.
Yeah, 20 times.
Without pulling the head off and
checking. Without checking the head. Wow. So, unfortunately, George has lost two or three heads at the 60-foot mark, you know, coming cast off the two-step cast heads. So,
damn.
And it's just, and new heads, yeah. So, brand new cores, complete builds, and they're just not lasting.
Yeah. So, me and my friend George Jasewski, we basically put some money up, developed the head package that we have, okay, in the billet platform.
Yeah.
And obviously working together with Con, you know, and the developers that I suppose put it together for us.
Right.
We've got our own in-house package and, you know, maybe down the track, you know, we'll look at releasing it.
Now, a billet head though is that something that you would only need in like a really like
yeah, 1,000 horsepower? Yeah, that's an extreme. Yeah, correct.
So the cast would work just fine.
Oh yeah, the cast works.
And again, it depends on to what level you're chasing. For 90% of the people, the cast head's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, War GDR, that done that on one of our CNC ported heads. You know, that went 196 mile an hour. Mm-hmm. JJ's car, 199 mile an hour. So that head package in particular has gone 200, 210 mile an hour in other cars. So it works as well.
Right.
But then it's a reliability when you start pushing, you know, north of 3,000 horsepower that you need to have a cylinder head that can cope with, obviously, the stresses that it goes through.
Have you guys seen any benefit to, I guess, lower horsepower applications to running oversized valves?
Lower horsepower, no.
I mean, like 1,500. Like,
yeah, oh, yes, lower. 100%. Yeah, if you're at 1,500, we put oversized valves for sure. So for us, if we've got someone chasing 1,500,
yeah,
I'll push him to do one of our race head combos straight away because...
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
Again, you can make the power. You can make the power at 50 pounds of boost, but why not do it at 30 pounds of boost?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some good power. There's some good power gains in the motor.
Right.
Yeah.
If you make it more efficient, and you don't have to lean on it as much. So.
Now, do you guys believe in running shims?
Yes.
Or you guys do shimless?
Both? No,
we do both.
Both. Both. War GDR runs shims.
Okay.
10.8, 11,000, no problems.
And it gives you flexibility if you want to change camshafts on the go.
Right.
Yeah, you just shim it up and away you go.
No, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
They do work. If you're having issues with shims, there's another issue going on.
Okay.
Okay, so whether it be a soft valve spring or something along those lines. So,
Or you haven't shimmed it correctly. You're measuring,
So generally, like I said, most cars will still run shims other than the big race cars like Jun, for example, now and
are they 2J buckets? Yakuza.
Sorry,
are they?
What? Sorry,
are they 2J buckets?
No. The 2Js use the RB26 buckets.
I'm just curious.
You're poking, aren't you?
So, what about springs? What do you guys? I know there's a couple different companies that people use.
Yep.
I've heard there's a little bit of controversy around that too. But what do you guys recommend? I'm not going to ask you what you guys use.
Look, our normal chest, packages consist of the SuperTech valve train package and the SuperTech springs.
Double.
Double springs. We've got our own sort of mods that we do with that setup to get them where we want as well.
Okay.
So that Telford's sort of setup springs, is no problems.
Ferrier, obviously, you know, one of the best in the market. So we use them all depending on the application.
So now with the RB30, there's 3.4 and 3.6, right? Now, is that a choice or is that something that people...
It's a choice and, again, depends on the application that they want to use it for.
Okay.
So if you've got, like I'm building a 3.6 now for a customer, he's got a 3.6 in his street car that he wants to use for roll racing, which makes 1,800, 1,900 horsepower, really responsive with the size turbo and everything it's got.
So my street car has a Pramod 88.
Okay.
Makes 1,800 horsepower.
And you asked me. I told you, screws are loose in it. Another street car we're doing with a 3.6, this guy only wants about 1,000 horsepower. He's not chasing much, but he's got a billet 3.6.
He'll be very talky.
Yeah, he's got a billet 3.6. I'm going to put a smaller turbo on it, and he just wants something really responsive and fun to drive.
But why not go 3.2 then?
Because he wants the torque to make the power
cubes,
easier.
Cubes, isn't
the
it,
bigger old turbo, you've got more displacement.
Because I noticed you guys do a lot of 3.2 stuff, so this just seems pretty common, which I was actually surprised because I thought these bigger cars, I thought they were on 3.4s.
No, they're all 3.2s. They're all 3.2s.
So
it doesn't mean one day someone's not going to come out with a 3.6 that can rev as much as these.
Right.
Then obviously they'll make more power.
Right, right, right.
You know, but if they're limited to 10,000 RPM and this is an 11,000 RPM engine, then obviously you'd stick to the 3.2.
Right. Makes sense.
See, for drag racing, you've got your power band, which is set up by your gearing and all that anyway. Right. Yeah. So that's, you pick that's where really you're going to be.
Now, you guys have a ton of records, right? And I'm not really too familiar with all of them.
But we don't have the record that we want yet, but it's coming.
Before we get there.
What do we have at the moment?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
I want to know for myself.
War GDR is the quickest manual 34 in the world.
Okay.
Warzilla's the fastest 34 in the world outright.
Okay.
First one to the sixes. Jun 2 was first to the sixes as well. First street GDR to the sixes.
Okay.
And it's the quickest and fastest street GDR in the world. Or quickest and fastest GDR in the world, period. Then we've got George's VL, which is the quickest and fastest radial VL.
Okay.
Pete's 33,
the quickest and fastest 33 GDR. What else is there? I'm missing stuff.
The one I'm complaining about.
Zeus is currently the quickest and fastest RB pro mod in the world. Powered car in the world, period. There's more I'm missing, but Goat was the first 32 into the sevens. Goat was the first 32 into the sevens as well. Yeah. Yanni's is the quickest 35 in Australia. Quickest street 35 in Australia anyway. What else is there? I think it's off the top of my head.
If you get over the years how many records come and go, but at the moment, that's where we're at with all these. And obviously
– And now he could tell you what he's chasing.
The GDR platform, you know, we want to own it. Like, we own it and we want to keep owning it. That's just where we're at. But I suppose from my perspective, you know, and everyone, you know, involved, we just want to be import outright, number one.
Fastest import outright,
yeah.
So we're not stopping until that.
That's Natty. We're after him.
It seems like everybody's after him, huh?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, why not?
Look, they raised the bar. So, you know, it's up to us to get there.
Do you think you can do it?
100%. It's a matter of time.
Yeah, it's not if. It's when.
Yeah, we're pretty confident. It will come together. And
look, don't get me wrong, very impressive. What they've achieved is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, but if someone can run it, someone else can.
Right.
It's just a matter of time and getting your shit together.
Now, it's a 2J.
Yeah. Yep.
That actually pretty much stamped it right there for the people in the States. Like, it's a 2J. Of course, no other import platform is going to do that, right? RB, you would hope it would be like competing with it, but we don't really see it happen too often.
Correct.
So how close are you guys to potentially breaking that record?
We've gone 567 at 256 mile an hour and we still probably have another 300 to 400 horsepower to throw up the car. More than that at the time that we ran the 567.
Probably another 500 to 600.
Another 500 to 600.
Yeah, but the problem is harnessing that 500 to 600.
Yeah,
you know, early enough in the pass to get the best out of it. Because if your early increments aren't there, it's not going to translate to ET.
Right, right.
And that's the hard part. And the other thing is we're doing it in a different platform to what's traditionally import.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're all clutch cars, lock up clutches.
Yeah,
like traditionally.
Right.
So we're running a converter package.
Okay.
You know, with a Liberty.
Oh, you know? Liberty.
And it's been a challenge. Been a challenge. We've been on top of it, and we are to an extent on top of it.
Yeah.
But it just is a lot harder to run than a traditional clutch.
Okay.
And then that puts you at a weight.
But at the same time, it's a lot easier once you get on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, because it becomes more reliable and consistent. These are the things.
Trade off.
There's no converter drive that's been designed to, I suppose, work with an import style engine that's very peak, horsepower peaky, rather than V8 that's makes all its torque, you know, early in the RPM range.
What power are these cars making? Like
in excess of 3,000.
3,000.
In excess of 3,000.
Yeah. How are you adding more power into there to get the times? Because you're battling traction also, right?
Yeah, like I said, it's all about
when you bring the power
in. How quick you can bring the power in. I mean, look, you can keep throwing nitrous at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the power's unlimited. But if it's not usable power,
right,
all you're doing is burning up parts. So you have to, you know, you have to get everything to gel together. The stars need to align. You know, you, I mean, we were chasing a shock issue. Like one of our shocks was blown for nearly 9 months.
Oh, we
managed to get a few passes in between, and we're thinking, okay.
We're chasing our tail a bit. And
it's all good. And then the next time it's not good.
Yeah.
You know, and for that reason, like, you know, it's difficult.
When do you think you guys are going to be able to break that record? Is there a time, like a certain time frame?
Well, all the stars need to line up.
It can happen at any time that we go out. If everything works the way we want it to, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want to do it on Australian soil.
Yeah.
And one day we want to go there and race the best. You know,
do you guys plan on coming to the States to do anything? Obviously, you guys were at GTR Festival.
Yes, yeah. My aspiration is to race at World Cup one day. I mean, I wanted to do it last year, but just never had the luck. Maybe this year's not the year as well, you know, but one day we will.
Any other records that you guys want to break aside from that one?
Well, if you break that record, what else is there to break?
For the import side, that's like your...
Yeah, that's the pinnacle of records for us. Yeah.
Okay. And what about for like your street car?
And we, I mean, look, at the moment, the RBs are quicker than Supras down the track in street car form.
Okay.
Is there a Supra running 630s? Oh, sorry, White Rice. Okay.
Yeah, no, White Rice got you.
but what do you classify that car as?
No, that's not, I don't, that's not a street car.
That's what I'm saying. So a pro street car.
Yeah.
You know, in pro street,
I mean, if you want to call it. Grannis is running fast times.
He's gone 50s, hasn't he? Yeah, I think 50s, he's gone 50s.
But not 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fast.
Yeah. It is fast.
But we've, we've got a car for White Rice as well.
White Rice?
Yeah.
What car is that?
That's George's VL.
Oh, the VL?
Yeah, yeah. The one I showed you yesterday.
So you're planning on
destroying White Rice's record. Sorry, just putting it out there.
So talk to me about
full respect to everyone, but you know, we're here to go fast.
And it's an RB.
Yes.
RB, yeah.
Yes.
So I did see the car. It does look crazy. It is very, very, very well done.
It's meticulous.
Everything on that car. It's almost like, are you even driving it? It's insane. So can you talk to me about that that setup and how long it took to make it? And
George is through and through a VL lover.
Okay.
That's his heritage and background before he got into the GDR scene. And for him, he's always wanted to build a VL that would elevate, I suppose, all race cars to the next level, and from his perspective.
Right.
So he went on this journey about 4 or 5 years ago.
No, I think it was about 3. It was less.
I know, but he started planning for it probably 4 or 5 years ago, you know, and then it probably started 3 years ago in the build. And every bar, everything on the car was thought about, designed to achieve a car that is, I suppose, built to look like a VL, still body.
Yeah.
You know, retain all the traits of, you know, what the tradition of the car is.
Mm-hmm.
However, have the chassis, all the components, the technology.
Right.
You know, and the parts required to take the car to, you know, to run easy fives.
So his street VL, which is still a full chassis car.
That weighs 3,200 pounds.
Yeah, full chassis car, 3,200 pounds. There's no twin rails in the car, factory floor pan, all that sort of stuff. Okay. And that car's gone 642 at 224, was it? 224, yes. 222 mile an hour, something like that.
And we're on a quicker run, but we lost a tire at half track.
And that car get faster once we go out with that again. That's,
just haven't spent time taking faster. It to the track.
So what is in it? What does it consist of?
Same RB platform.
Same engine combo, smaller turbo than what's on that VL though.
Which is what?
The VL has a 111.08 now.
Okay.
When it done the 40, had a 110.08.
Okay.
And the new VL has a 110.114.
And it's a 3.2 billet? Like
3.2 billet. So the engine, the long engine's the same. Cold side's the same. So intake manifold, intercooler, dry ice, ice box, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And just the turbo's different. That's it.
And it's on, of course, a Motec.
Of course, yeah. Right. So that runs our build packages in them. So,
Now, what about transmission?
Turbo 400.
Ours race clutch, yeah. Turbo 400.
Non-lockup.
A lot of the fabrication looks insane on there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so the guys up at Impress Fab and Six Boost done the chassis.
Six Boost?
Yeah, so Six Boost do the manifolds, yeah. So Kyle up there, okay. I think he oversaw a lot of the build.
That's what a lot of the design that him and George came up
and
with.
And then the car come back here. From Moitz here went to Moitz. They done the other fabrication and fit out on that. So now it's come back here. Obviously, we're going to do the wire and finish the rest of it off. So,
So
drivetrain and wiring here.
When are we going to be able to see this car run?
Very soon.
Hoping in the next month or so to be out.
Next month.
Yeah.
And then you guys are going to do some tests and tunes and
stuff. Yeah, definitely. A lot of testing, get in the car.
And then obviously it's going to hit the dyno first, right?
I'm correct, assuming.
And then what do you think it'll make on the dyno?
That combo has made over 3,000.
Yeah, but we're not going to push it on dyno. Yeah. Just get a tune in it.
Just get a tune
and go
right.
out and just do it all the track.
But if you're not going to push on a dyno casually, what does it make? You know?
Something like that. Maybe 2,500-ish.
Pack it up and let's go.
Yeah.
So this is your winter season right now, right?
Yeah. Correct.
So this is technically the best time, I would assume, to go out and take the cars. Yep. And correct. So that's why you guys are on crunch time with that.
Correct, yeah.
So how much more time, what's the window like before the weather
probably
starts?
Get to about, July, August-ish. Yeah. About August it starts turning.
Oh, wow. So it's pretty, I mean, with how cars work.
3 months. So we have about 3 months now. Yeah. So we need to make the best of it.
Okay. Well, I hope you guys.
We're going to try.
Yeah.
You'll hear about it.
I hope you guys do it. That car is really, really well put together.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have June 3, which is also...
It's also George's car.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So George has got a fleet of cars that he has here. Obviously, the two VLs, June 3, Warzilla, and Yakuza. Mm-hmm. They're his main race cars.
Yeah.
Okay, they're all RB platform, okay, that he's entrusted us in looking after to achieve his... goals.
Before I move on to this one, I forgot to ask, what does it cost to build that?
That VL?
Yeah.
They're $1 million cars.
Yeah.
$1 million?
Yeah.
It'd be up there.
Wait, hold on.
You might get some change.
Yeah, well, not a million, but not.
No, look, you might get some change, okay, but, you know, they're $1 million cars.
A Promod is like $500,000, though.
US.
Yeah.
Yeah, US. We're in Australian dollars.
I keep forgetting we're in Australia, yeah.
Well, all that's not far off a Promod build in a VL chassis.
Yeah, I mean, 500,000 is rough.
Yeah, US, yeah.
Yeah, it's around
so
there.
If US, you end up around that 800K mark.
Wow.
So it's you're going to be that sort of money, yeah.
Okay. So something like this, though, with how it's done, could it be the same? Price-wise?
Probably.
This one maybe
there's
more.
There's a fair bit of work.
Because there's a lot of development work that went into this. So this was this was built by the hour, all the chassis work.
Okay.
Okay, and to be honest, it went down a direction, stopped, we changed, went a different direction before we ended up with this. So it got built 3 times at the chassis shop.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's all custom. Everything on the car, while it retains a lot of the GDR heritage, meaning obviously the four-wheel drive, the ATESA system,
right.
IRS, front and rear, but it's all got special suspension components.
Yeah,
and
externally
arms.
It looks like a GDR, but there's a lot that's gone into it in the suspension side in particular.
Where would this fit if it in class?
To me, it's a Pro Street still.
You don't see cars like this running down the track.
Yeah, correct.
It seems like you guys have a system or an engine.
We do have
so that guys. So that's the same engine package that's in the Pro Mods as well. So
okay.
So Zeus, Yakuza, June 3, both his VLs, Warzilla, Pete's RH6, they all run the same engine package. So rocket cover to sump is identical.
Okay, so the only thing that's changing is
the turbo, a hot side,
right?
So you're changing your hot side for the turbo to suit your application.
Yep,
and that's it.
And positioning of the turbo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the
manifold and the turbos are really the only things that are changing. They all run the 24 injector setup.
24 injectors.
24 IDs, yeah.
Wow. And what are you guys doing for fuel pumps on these things?
Mechanical.
Mechanical.
Yeah.
So all these have mechanical fuel pumps.
Correct.
Obviously with those. 24 injectors.
Yeah.
And that's only for this car, like the ProMod style.
Yeah. All the big ones. Sort of are pushing.
The ones that run nitrous will have 24 injectors. Otherwise, it's not necessary because we run
dry nitrous setups.
Yeah, dry nitrous setup.
Okay.
So that's why we need the injectors, because if you get to the point wearing whatever, 1-2 stages of nitrous, you need the fueling.
Now, what else is done to this car?
Turbo 400 non-lockup.
Ours race clutch, Turbo 400 as well. It's got obviously the bead lock wheels, PRP, front diff, all that sort of stuff. the CPC cooler, the Nitto rotating assembly, full Motec package, dashes, ECUs, PDMs. Yeah, it's pretty much had everything you can have done.
That's a 315 tire tucked in under the guard there.
Oh, is it?
Still steel body as well.
So that's got the carbon tunnels and everything on it as well, so carbon tubs.
Well, I noticed you guys run the cable throttles.
Yes.
Oh, for the race cars?
For 100%. The race car, 100%, yeah.
Okay, so no drive-by-wire. What's the reason?
At that level, you want to back off a throttle. No, that throttle closes. look, we've had, obviously, at that sort of level, once you start engine plate in a car and all that sort of thing like that is as well, you get a lot of vibrations and that through the motor as well.
Okay.
Through the car itself, not the motor, through the car. And then obviously those vibrations then transfer through to the electronics. So your drive-by-wire motor, we find, starts struggling with vibrations like that. So
you don't want it to close on you if you want a good run.
We've had a couple other big cars with the drive-by-wire, and the cars have been on good passes and the throttle will close on them. So,
and it's not a tuning issue. It's just
There's only so much you can do in there. The servo itself just can't keep up. You see the duty cycle of the motor ramp up. It's like struggling to keep that blade open, and then it's just like, nah, I can't do it anymore, and it closes.
Do they make something like an alternative solution?
We've tried different drive-by-wires.
Look, we've got little things we do, obviously, to help with them, but there's only so much you can do as well. Do you know what I mean? So if you're telling me I want 2,000-plus horsepower and I want to race a car, then we'll go to a cable.
Okay.
Look, anyone that's building a car to that level, to go sixes, no one's running drive-by-wire.
No, of course. So, yeah. And especially if you're telling them that, you know, you have to run that, then I'm sure they'll be okay.
Yeah, with like a high 7-second car, mid sevens, like, yeah, no problems, you'll do it. War GDR still drive-by-wire. So, but again, we've had a couple throttle bodies fail on that. We actually had one fail on GDR Festival. We had to get one up from CPC in Wollongong. So we had to Uber one up and get a throttle body on because...
Yeah, but that we didn't had fit.
That, so it did a fit. It off another car. Yeah, so we actually took it off JJ's car because his turbo decided to leave the chat.
Wow.
So,
no, that was different. It ended up coming off COTS.
No, come off JJ's.
No, the one from COTS ended up in the car.
I lost track. Anyway, but on the Friday night, COTS had an issue with his drive-by-wire as well.
Got it running.
So COTS had an issue on Friday night as well. Yeah, the gearing side actually broke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, I have a question that I don't really care if it's embarrassing or not, right? But it doesn't look like you guys bump in.
We can, but we don't want to put stress because we're not racing anyone, just racing the clock. We don't want to put stress on the gearbox for no reason. Because
I don't think any of the other cars, they were rolling in.
We can bump in. But again, here is not so much. Okay, when we're out, we say June 3 now, we're not racing head to head with anyone. We're trying to PB with the car and run a record. So. Okay. If you bump in, then you're putting more stress on the transmission and all that sort of stuff. So we go, okay, you know what? You can stage the car where you want to stage it and let's go through our process. But if you certainly come up head to head with someone, you can bump in, no problems.
Because I haven't seen, even at GTR Festival, like I didn't see any
No one
cars.
Was bumping in because there was no head-to-head racing at GTR Festival.
Got you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So over here, there's not that much. There's head-to-head, obviously, but... With a lot the pro mods, we're chasing that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, with the pro mods, that's normal. But when we're chasing the clock, rather than, you know, it's not really a race event. Okay, it's a festival where we're trying to run fast numbers in GDRs.
Interesting.
That's how Andrew has designed the whole festival.
I wasn't sure because I guess I haven't seen.
Yeah, they can bump in. The bump switches bump. The 35 set up on every.
But even the 35s in America struggle to bump.
There's like some whole, there's a bunch of different, you know, sequences. That
I think I do it with the paddle.
It's
a little weird to get it to launch, and the delay is also an issue too.
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. Right, so it's a little strange. Now, you guys are in Australia the top shop for like the fastest cars. You guys have a ton of records, right? Do you guys have any close competitors here that you feel like, you know, kind of push you to keep going?
Look, obviously our biggest competitor will be Matuk Racing. 100%. Right. We've pushed each other through the years to obviously push the whole RB game to a whole new level. So without that competition, you're not going to push yourself.
How is it like in Australia when it comes to shops, like in terms of like competition?
Yep.
I suppose when the biggest rivalry we had with them is when we were running Jun 2.
Okay.
Okay. And
King 32.
We're racing to the sixes. And then after we ran sixes, we obviously kept going until we sort of achieved our goal, my goal, which was the quickest GTR in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great rivals all the way through to the end and, you know, on to the next one. That's how it is. And look, rivalry is great.
You know, 100%.
They're a great bunch of guys. You know, we're mates with them and everything. But at the end of the day, when it's at the track, it's business.
Have you guys had any? I know, and I don't know Matuks.
Yep.
But he doesn't seem to like to lose.
He definitely doesn't like to lose.
So have you guys had any?
Who likes to lose? No one likes to lose.
I could lose.
But some people can hold their emotions and some people can't.
Look, the amount of time we've won or lost runs, like races and events to them by 0.001. It's happened both ways for a while. So like it's good. Obviously, if they go faster than us, then we're going to come out and try to go faster than them.
Right.
And, you know, we'll do what we can to make that happen. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
But I think at the moment, more than ever, I think we're chasing the world platform.
Right.
So that rivalry's been done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a fleet of world-class cars, as you can see. These cars will do what they need to do. But we've got Yakuza, which is George's Pro Mod, and mm-hmm. Zeus. Okay. And there's a couple of others that are getting built in the background as well, some other Pro Mods that are going to run the RB platform. And at the end of the day, we're chasing the outright import.
Overall. And that's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the goal. That's and 100%. That's where we're at. So really that's the next phase of where we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
We want to maintain our records.
Right.
That we hold. Okay. And obviously get the VL down into fives, etc., and all the rest of it. But, you know, we've got that ambition as well. Because that'll really cement all records.
Right. Right. So June 2 is still in the States right now?
It is.
Yes. Okay. What's the plan for June 2?
Well, the plan was for it to stay there and you go. But I think we need to bring it back because some sort of permit has lapsed and we couldn't get it renewed.
Okay.
So we're just waiting for Andrew to work out what we're going to do.
Right.
Yeah. So if it has to come back, it has to come back. So we'll see.
So there's not going to be World Cup happening or anything like that?
Look,
possibly? Or?
At this stage, I can't say yes or no. Mm-hmm. It just depends on where what we end up with Zeus over the next month or two, and also possibly when the new cars are going to finish and what we have that we can send there.
Okay.
Yeah. So look, if not this year, next year, but obviously, you know, we really want to be there.
Yeah. I would love to see that.
For me, it's bucket list.
Yeah.
You know, type.
Yeah, no, it's definitely on the to-do list.
Yeah. And I want to do a couple of years of, you know, like GTR Festival and Heltec World Cup.
Yeah, World Cup is definitely the best one.
You want to go fast? If you've got a car dialed in, that's where to do it.
That's
where Lanetti ran their time.
Yeah.
But the conditions that they race in, you know, minus 2,000.
Yeah.
Come on.
We don't see those conditions here. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the track is off its head. The conditions are perfect. You know, so you're probably going to make 300-400 horsepower.
Right.
You know, just from that.
Just because.
Yeah.
Before I came here, people were saying that the tracks here aren't that great and so on, but like you guys have a really nice
Sydney facility. Dragway is actually a really good track.
it's a really nice good track.
Yeah, the facility is off its head.
Okay.
Okay. It's probably one of the best drag racing facilities in the world.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a radial track is concerned, it's tricky.
Okay.
Prepping it, you know, it's not easy. It's hard, especially if it's not scraped, if it's just destroyed by street cars or slick cars or the rest of it. It's an art. But, you know, they've had people come and go, and you know, it's a lot about the glue and how it's applied.
Okay.
And we've seen days where the track's wonderful. Like it's good enough to run records on. Mm-hmm. Over the years, it's been good enough for us, and those days will come back.
And this is, you guys go there to do test and tunes?
Yeah.
Like 100%. So we're racing there on Thursday now. So Thursday, Friday, we're out there again.
So they have something going on pretty much every day of the week, or it's
No. We don't have the luxury of
every probably 2 to 3 weeks is usually something.
2 to 3 weeks, possibly sometimes a month. It just depends on.
Mm.
Yeah. They do track rentals though, no? Or you can rent it?
Yeah, they do. But again, those rentals for what we're trying to do, maybe every two, 3 weeks they're available.
Okay.
It's not every week, every day.
Right. Yeah. So when you guys do these, because the only time I see these things happening is like it's private. Is it private rentals or is it like
the rentals are private?
The rentals are private. Yeah.
Okay. I was gonna say because I don't know if
so. The dragway
still open to 20 cars. Or
so
10
the dragway
cars,
doesn't.
Okay.
The dragway doesn't put on, for example, an event every month that's dedicated to radials or anything like that. So it's pretty much a group of people that go, okay, you know what? Let's book a track. Let's set up for radials. One lane radial prep. One lane slick prep. and let's go for 20 cars and everyone will get out. So unless there's an event, every now and then the track will do a test and tune.
Okay.
But then it's not radial prepped.
Yeah, but then it's not radial prepped, then you might have 150 cars there. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
I see.
So then you get less track time.
Right.
So
Right. And you guys, when you guys are doing these test and tunes, are you guys with other people who are same level, or it can be anybody?
It's pretty much open to most test and tunes are pretty much open to open. Whoever wants to go.
Open, but all these guys, I think, are either setting up their cars or trying to go fast.
Okay.
Yeah. It's usually the same group of people.
Right. So when June 2 was going down the track at GTR Festival, it was super cool to watch. But I noticed that you guys would let off after if you didn't get a good 60-foot. So is that just a...
No,
to keep the car?
It took us a bit of time to
get on top of everything.
To get on top of the track
versus
our track here. So we had to make changes to the setup. You know, and the car.
You guys are doing back-to-back runs, and it seemed like you guys were going, I was like, oh, they're going to go, and then you guys
back then, actually, you know what happened? We had a couple misfire issues when we were out there, okay? And before the 650 we'd done there, we actually realized our intercooler was split, so there was water going through the motor,
that
was causing the misfire.
Yeah, but the day before, the car was also turning left, and we...
Oh, yeah, we had to adjust we had to do some adjustments to the forward drive and alignments and that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were battling, one, obviously set up with the car, and then two, we had a leaking intercooler, which was spraying water through the motor as well.
So water was going into the manifold.
So our 650 that we'd done was actually with a hurt engine as well.
Really?
Yeah, so that motor was hurt, and we've just gone, you know what, we're here. Yeah. We ended up taking the water out of the cooler and just ran it with no water. And
whatever happens, happens.
We'll give it a go, and we're here. If it works, it works. If it doesn't,
we're going home
either way. Yeah. So
somebody told me, I can't remember who it was, and they were saying that if their 60-foot isn't good, it's not worth hurting the motor.
Look, when we're here and we're setting up a car, so we're going to go out with June 3 now. We're not interested in backdooring the car. There's no point unless our front half is where it needs to be.
Okay.
So especially when you've got a cast head, for example, that when you do throw the horsepower, you know, you might get a couple runs, you might get 10, you might get 15, you might get 2. So it's, you know, you put the stress on it when you know you're ready to do something.
Right, so right.
It seems you know what it's going to do in the back half.
Yeah.
It's the front half where the time's at.
Right, which is why I assume that. But then again, when you're running, I guess you can only, as a driver, you can only feel it. But
correct.
You don't really know what your 60-foot is.
He's done enough laps in the car to know when he's on or not, yeah.
Right.
The 60-foot is a telltale, but... If you feel the acceleration where it needs to be between the 60-foot and 330, that's where the increments are. For me, it's all about the time between the 60-foot and the 330.
Okay.
Okay. You can sometimes have a slower 60-foot and still be quicker to the 330.
Mm.
So it's not just the 60-foot. I don't chase 60-foot times. For me, I chase 330 numbers.
Okay, it's just a good indicator to tell if you have more.
Look, of course, you need to dial a car in to 60-foot well,
right?
But that's not the be all end all. You know, it's honestly the 330 time for me. That's just how I.
Like if we had where we finished up at GDR Festival, we're confident if we had one more day, we would have PB'd and rewrote the record. The car was on point. Everything was there. Other than the intercooler, which we were prepared to run without.
That 6.5 time, the car was...
Yeah, that 6.5 time was... We had a fresh motor there ready to go. We had fresh trans if we needed.
I mean, the bottom end was fine. We just hurt the head.
Yeah, correct.
You know,
but we didn't have time to change it.
Yeah.
Didn't you guys have an issue also where you were looking for...
The torque converter broke.
That's what it was.
Yeah, the torque converter broke.
And you guys were able to find one.
No, we will... Marty from Neil Chance, what a champion. When we finally got a hold of him, he drove halfway between... Where was he again?
Was it Kansas?
Kansas to Texas.
And then Omar and Daniel met him halfway.
And the part that broke, he gave it to us and we rebuilt it, put it back in the day before, the last day.
So we lost our test day.
Yeah.
And then we had the intercooler split. We repaired the intercooler. We tried to get in the world to put it back on, but it split again. We're going, we've got an issue here. Cool. So then the last two runs we've done, which was the 6.5 and the 6.7.
Yeah.
Was done with no ice water and a hurt motor, a hurt head. So it's, we definitely had more to throw it and we would have been wrapped if we had one more day.
Yeah.
Because, the car would have been fast.
Swapped the head over and kept going.
Wow. So that car is going to obviously either stay there or come back. But when it does come back here, what are the plans for it?
Well, that sounds a bit. It's going to be a Globetrotter.
Yeah,
that's it. It's done.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it's more of an exhibition car now. This is, June 3 is the car.
This, yeah.
This that's is our car that, now. This is the car.
We have to, yeah, this has got a chassis that we can now throw some serious power at.
So the chassis over the on the June 2 car was just cooked.
You don't want to see, you don't want to see that chassis, man.
Yeah.
It's that car shouldn't be allowed to race. It needs to go, as Craig from SCF goes, you just got to put in a Perspex box and push it aside. Don't touch it.
Wow.
Just leave it.
Crazy.
So now you're all, now the you're car good. Just, the, if you look at the chassis, that yeah. car should not be going as fast as it's going. There is no chassis connectors in it. There's nothing. It's literally got a 6-point cage. It's had some extra bar work around the driver. It's got the 9-inch diff in that's the it. Tubular cross member. And that's all it's got.
Wow.
So there's no 25-3 cages or anything like that. Yeah. We got that Jordan Martin's old car here. And when we saw the bar work in that, we're like, okay, this is a lot more than we've got in Jun. And Jun's half a second faster.
Yeah.
So
what is the expected time with this? What do you think you run with this? I don't know if you mentioned.
Very, very, very low sixes is the aim.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not gonna say fives, but let's just see where we end up,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a few months. And if we see that, you know, it's all working the way we want it to, mm-hmm. we've got the power to run fives.
Yeah, but just a matter of how much you can put down.
See,
in it.
Let's yeah. just see how it all works together.
And there's a lot of stuff that we've done on that, well, that's been done on that, you know, by Craig and the boys at SCF.
Is it capable of running fives? Yes. Okay. Is it going to be easy? No.
No.
It's just
– we've got to get ahead around a lot of stuff. Let's be
realistic. Would I love to see it run a five? You betcha. Yeah, that would be just insane.
Wow.
Absolutely insane.
That'd be
so
that'd
never
be
say crazy. Never, but
yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy.
I noticed that I was watching video on Andrew's channel, Motor yep. Video, when you were putting together a motor and you were torquing, you weren't torquing the head, but you were putting the studs in.
Yep.
There's people who just hand tighten them, leave it. And then there's people who tighten them down all the way.
Yeah.
So what is better, or what are you, what from your experience?
We tighten them down all the way. So okay. we screw them all the way down, and then you'll obviously nip it up a bit. Like you'll tighten it up a little bit. You're not going to screw it right down once it's bottomed down.
Right.
Once it's bottomed out, you know, you might pull 10 newton-meters on it, 5 newton-meters on it. Like there's not much tension that's required there.
So you don't just do the hand tight until it can't go no more and then?
No, not really. I always nip them up a bit. So again, and it's by feel. I do it by feel now. It's not like I've got a set tension that I screw them down to.
Right.
So, you know, like same with the boys upstairs, same sort of thing. You know, you'll screw them in and you'll tighten them up a bit by hand and that's it. When I say by hand, you might have an Allen key or a T-bar or something that you tighten it up
No, with. I meant like strictly by hand. No yep. Allen, nothing.
Yeah. No, so I'm not going to say leave them loose, no.
Okay. Because there is some, I guess, some methods that people have yep. done with different platforms and
yep.
it's just hand tight and then
yep.
and then leave it, but I wasn't sure.
You can do that. There's no okay. There's no negative side to doing that.
Just what you're comfortable with, I suppose.
It's whatever it's works for exactly you. Right.
I just wasn't sure if it causes issues with like maybe cracking the block if you do it all the way down.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be screwing your head start down and then getting a 3/8 ratchet or a breaker bar and tightening it down. No. You don't want to be doing that.
Okay.
You don't want to be doing that.
Yeah, it really is just hand tight.
Okay.
But not by hand. Hand tight as in like, yep, okay. I feel it tight now. That's it. With the ratchet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And then also gaskets, like yes. Head gaskets and so yep. on. So it could even be on something like this or, yep. you know, your standard package car, yep. whatever it is. What are you guys doing for head gaskets?
If I'm running an MLS, I'll run with a Nitto head gasket.
Okay.
We've had good success with that. From there, if I'm going anything bigger than that, we'll just go to a firing setup.
A firing setup. Yep. With the firing setup, you're doing what kind of gasket? Same one?
So a copper gasket.
Okay.
Copper gasket with a
ring.
Yeah. A ring?
A ring copper, yeah.
Yep.
Have you guys ever used brass?
The brass rings, yes.
Brass rings.
Our firing gaskets will run the brass rings. There's obviously a groove in the block where your firing sits in.
Mm-hmm.
And then each motor, you're going to set up a little bit different with how much protrusion you want on the firing as well. So how much crush you get on it.
The Nitto head gasket, can you yes. still use that with the firings as well?
No. If you go to a firing gasket setup, mm-hmm. then you won't. Okay. I have done in the past an O-ring, a stainless O-ring in the block,
mm-hmm.
which gives you a bit of extra seal on the, so the O-ring will crush into the dual bore seal on the NATO gasket as well. Okay, so you got to set that up, obviously, at the same time you're doing all the machine work.
So I have a brass, and then I'm also using a NATO.
Yeah.
But the brass sits inside, right inside.
Inside
of the
block?
It's inside of the fire ring. It's like perfectly, the machine shop knows how to like line it up perfectly.
So does it sit on the firing on the NATO gasket or on the outside of it, for example? It'll sit on it.
On it.
Because the O-ring will press into the firing.
Okay, that's how you get your protrusion.
Yes.
Is that what
they're using? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So the NATO gasket from memory has a 2 or 3 thou protrusion, and it might be 1 or 2 thou on that ring, which then crushes into that as well.
Right. Right.
We've done that as well. We have done that, and we've had success with it as well.
I had these questions that I was like, oh, I got to ask because I'm going through the process myself.
Yeah, no reason why that would work.
No. Like I said, we've done it. War GDR's original setup was like that and went 840s, I think it was, with that sort of setup. So
and 625s across the board for, well,
625s, yeah.
Even these?
These, we've had them 2,500 with the 2,000 studs. With 80s and 40s, they come with the billets.
Wow.
So,
that's impressive.
We've run with them, no problems. Feel no need to go up yet. I think now that we're starting to get to the higher level, the studs either become a throwaway item or you go something a bit better. And it's more now that we're going to the billet heads because you can get the stretch on the stud you need when you go to a big stud with that material.
Well, that's good to know. Good to know. Well, we're coming up short on time, but I do want to say it is an honor to be here in Australia with you guys doing this podcast. You guys are legends. You have a ton of people in the States that look up to what you guys are doing. So hopefully you guys can continue to push the RB platform to higher limits and also break that import record. I'll be looking forward to seeing that. Much luck. Best of luck to what you guys are going to push with this platform.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's appreciated and our honor also, you know, like having an interview with you.
The
podcast, yeah.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. So, if you guys can let the viewers and listeners know where to find you guys,
social media, website, Instagram. Email. Look, our website is close to coming online now. Website has been down at the moment, so that's close to coming back online. So, really, Instagram, Facebook are the best ways to get in contact with us at the moment.
Okay, cool. There you guys have it. Thank you guys again. If you guys are watching the premiere right now, make sure you guys hit that like button. If you're listening, make sure you guys keep listening on all streaming platforms. And also make sure you guys head over to streetalpha.co to purchase some merch. Until next time, guys, catch you on the next one. Peace.
Thanks.
Cool. Thank you.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile. And you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.